The contents of this podcast have not been reviewed or endorsed by the Chicago Bulls. All opinions expressed by Sam Smith are solely his own and do not reflect the opinions of the Chicago Bulls or their basketball operations staff, parent company, partners, or sponsors. His sources are not known to the Bulls, and he has no special access to information beyond the access and privileges that go along with being an NBA-accredited member of the media.
Hey, this is Sam Smith, and I'm starting a podcast here on Bulls.com, and it'll be available on iTunes. Those of you who know me know I have no idea what a podcast is, and I think it has something to do with pod people in a frightening movie I saw as a kid. I'm told that's not exactly it, so I'm going to proceed. You will hear me make a lot of ums from time to time because I'm from Brooklyn, and that's how we speak. I won't be saying, hey, what are you looking at? Because I can't see you, actually, being the slogan of being a New Yorker. But I am going to talk about the Bulls, what's coming up this week, NBA, news, notes, and my particular view on the NBA, which is really all that matters, certainly to me. I will have some guests, probably not too many, who, since they will have to sit and be very close to me as I grill them with interesting, at least to me and us, perhaps not them, questions. And then I'll probably do some fan questions like I do for my Ask Sam on Friday. You know, I do my NBA weekly column on Monday. And I'll probably riff off that a little bit and hopefully go into that in some depth. So I think it will be interesting, and I will be studying to find out still what a podcast is and why they named it that. I'm still unsure about the pod prefix part. But stick with me, and perhaps you can help me define what exactly I'm doing. All right, let's take a look at the Bulls' upcoming schedule. And as we've talked about plenty, this is tough. One of the tougher stretches, not so much in you know, back-to-backs and overall in the season. Actually, the Bulls have had a fairly relatively easy schedule. Now, Tom wouldn't tell you that because coaches are not allowed to say that. But they haven't had the huge Western trips that we're used to. But now, you know, with the second major one, with the United Center closed up for other events, the Bulls are out for a couple of weeks. And we had the Nets and the Hawks games last weekend, and Bulls will be heading out west for Denver and Utah this week. These are tough places to play. The teams are okay. You know, Denver's pretty good. Utah's sort of hanging on. I think that's one of those teams that's not going to make the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised if they made some major deal. Maybe even, you know, there's been obviously a lot of talk about Al Jefferson, Paul Millsap, but they have to do something, even though it doesn't seem they understand it quite yet. They've got some good young players not getting in games that they need to get in games. And so that'd be a team I would be continuing to watch, especially as they sort of come out of it. One of the reasons simply hard to play there, beside the talent, is the altitude. And both those teams try to take advantage of it, especially Denver. Denver's a tough team because they run. They'll shoot, open the court. You know, they used to have the J.R. Smith with Anthony there, which was a tough team to play. And now they're just, you know, they're a team of, they have no all-star, and despite, you know, a good record in the middle of the race in the West, you know, 10 or 12 games over 500, probably maybe a game or two about ahead of where the Bulls have been in the Western Conference. But a team that scores, one of the leading team scorers in the league, 104 points a game, give up 100 points a game. Yeah, but still, one of the statistical indicators, really, of success in the NBA is margin of victory. And they're slightly ahead of the Bulls at more than 3 points per game better. So playing in Denver, tough game, then a back-to-back. You head over to Utah, which has struggled. They're still hanging on. There's still a few games over 500. And again, you go into the West, both Denver and Utah have losing records on the road. They have extraordinarily winning records at home. Denver and Thunder have the best winning records, which tells you something, in the league. Utah, despite a team that's fighting to get into the playoffs, one of the best home records in the league. So you're looking at two very tough teams. And as we know, the Bulls are shorthanded. Obviously, Derrick Rose is not back yet, and there still are other injuries. So from game to game, you don't seem to know who is going to be there. With the Bulls, we were shocked. I don't know if shocked's the right word, but all of a sudden, and I saw it. I was at the shoot-around Friday in Brooklyn, and Noah's there. And then we get to the game, and Noah's out. And his plantar fasciitis has gotten worse. And so, you know, I mean, but that's the nature of the NBA. And this thing these things go on around the league. So you have those two games, and then you come home just for one game. And you get the Spurs, who are one of the best teams in the league, have been for years, despite our efforts to try to write them off from year to year as too old. It's really remarkable to watch that team over the last couple of decades. Obviously, you have to get lucky first. The Bulls did with Michael Jordan and Derrick Rose, and then it's what you do with that. They had David Robinson first, and then the one season of his whole career, basically, that David Robinson's hurt, you know, they get the third odds with the lottery and end up with Tim Duncan after Boston had spent a season dumping games to set it up for Rick Pitino, who, if he got Duncan, probably would be in the Hall of Fame. But he ended up with Ron Mercer, and we found out in Chicago several years later where that leads. It turned out to be back to Louisville for Rick. So you get Spurs, Duncan, you know, had a slight, you know, big scare for San Antonio, certainly, with a go out with a knee the other day. Seems to be not that serious, but Manu's been in and out. But they've done just a great job in two things that's really impressive if you've watched them over the years. And there's much talk about the organization, and it's, you know, it's a really good organization. They come up with guys. Splitter has played, has worked in, played well. As we know, Ginobili was a second-round pick, and Tony Parker was the bottom of the first round. And small market, you know, they gave up Scola basically for nothing so they could, you know, stay under the luxury tax given their economic situation. But they used to be strictly a post-up team, walk it up, slow, play around the big guys. Made a complete transition to a much faster team, scoring one of the leading. I mean, I think there's like a point, just barely a point behind the Thunder as the leading scoring team in the league, or with Houston. Houston, I think, where they're right there with the Rockets too. So they've gone to a real up tempo team behind Tony Parker, push the ball, shoot a lot of threes. Really, you know, for all the stuff always about San Antonio, about they're boring, and you know they're a great team to watch. I mean, they're entertaining. They play fast. They have great players. You don't really appreciate basketball if you're not watching the Spurs. Now, you don't want to necessarily see them that much because they're really good. So, you know, in the Bulls' case, you're getting, you know, tough road trip and coming home getting the Spurs, and then you're back with one game before the All-Star break. And, you know, just let me say, next week, if they're still allowing me to do this podcast after the first one, you know, I'll get into All-Star break and probably a little more trade stuff. But one of the things I want to mention is also keeping up with my NBA column, which runs Monday. And if nobody else is saying it, I have to say it. It is best NBA column still written. I think it's the only one, and that's probably why it's – no, but it's – I'm proud of what we do here for the NBA News on Monday. And so given the Super Bowl, which I'm told was just recently played, I think it was on Sunday, but I was breaking down some of the film of the Miami-Toronto game afterwards, so I missed it. So I'm going to check to see if what the score was. I think the Giants are out, but I'm going to check that as well. But anyway, while I was breaking through that, the old joke is, and I listen to a lot of these podcasts. Well, maybe not podcasts, but radio shows. And I hear people say, well, you know, the NBA, I don't really have time for that until the Super Bowl is over. And I think to myself, I said, football, you know, I pay some attention to it. They just play basically once a week for the most part. I think there's a game on Monday also. But so what exactly are they doing the rest of the week? But in that case, so for a lot of fans, the NBA season begins right after the Super Bowl. So now it's over, I'm told. And so I sort of, if you want to sum up the first half of the season on some level, based on a couple of the trades, you know, with Rudy Gay last week to Toronto. I think the Grizzlies did okay, considering they broke up, you know, they traded their best player or close to, certainly the highest paid player. And frankly, I know they've gotten a lot of criticism for it. I don't think they're as good as they were a week before, which is always a negative. But that said, I think they did okay. Ed Davis is a nice pickup as a reserve. I think Tayshaun Prince gets you through the season. And I really can't blame a team for not wanting to pay a luxury tax. I know the notion among fans and among media is you do whatever case you win. But I listen to a lot of these people, and I also know they're not buying that new Testarossa that came out for $300,000. I mean, I know I'm still checking the prices. And so I don't think Rudy Gay was ever worth $18, $19 million, which is what he's making. He's never made an all-star team. He's a nice player, like to have him on the team. I think he's Monta Ellis is averaging 19.7 in his career. He's never made an all-star team. And I think Rudy Gay is on that list among the top three leading scorers in the league by history have not made an all-star team. So I have some sympathy with what Memphis did. I think they're still competitive on that level, so probably not as good. But that point, we also, what I would have done, if you could second guess it, I don't so much second guess a move given the financial implications, but much like with Oklahoma City and the trade of Westbrook earlier this season, luxury tax is not computed really till after the season. And I think you could make the same deals. I mean, you could always trade a great player. Russell and James Harden's a great player. I hope I didn't say Westbrook. James Harden's a great player. Rudy Gay's a great player. I think you could have waited till the end of the season. But as a result, and especially if you watch the way Miami has played, I think it's really hard case to make a case. You could say, okay, well, we always figure the favorites are going to be the teams that won because they had the last success. So it'll be Miami and Oklahoma City again. It was supposed to be the Lakers until now we're not sure if they can even make the playoffs. I still think they will. And if they do, I really think they have a shot to do something in the postseason, given the talent they've got. Now, that said, that's assuming they don't trade Powell. So who knows what's going on with the Lakers. And this, we'll have much time to talk about that next week as the trading deadline approaches. But you look at Miami, you look at the top of the West with Oklahoma City losing some games recently, and you say, well, all these teams are vulnerable. So it's going to make it interesting going down the stretch as a result because, you know, you can make cases for any number of teams, for the Knicks, for the Bulls, for the Nets, for the Pacers in the East, in the West, for the Spurs, the Thunder, Clippers, assuming, you know, with Chris Paul back. Even Golden State, the way they've played with Bogut back, you know, they got a big guy. They've got great scoring. And the Grizzlies, you know, still with Gasol and Randolph. And again, like I say, I would still rather have Rudy Gay. But the way they play slow. They play to the interior. Tayshaun Prince will be okay with them. So I don't think they hurt themselves as much, you know, as maybe some people suggest. One of the other things I looked at also in my NBA column Monday was sort of first half. You know, I like to sort of have, and everyone is kind of likes to have fun with that. Look at, you know, who are the best. And so just to let you know, they're not officially giving awards in the first half, but, you know, we in the media can do that. So I know there's been some mention in New York. My old favorite definition is what is a dynasty? And that would be when a family in China rules for 1,000 years or a New York team wins 3 games in a row. So that case, we've heard a lot of Carmelo Anthony being MVP. This is fairly stupid because he's a scorer. He's being celebrated a lot this season because he's not been as selfish as he had been in the past, which doesn't, in my view, qualify you to be the league MVP. I mean, to me, Durant and LeBron are heads above everybody in the league. Obviously, with Derrick Rose out, I would have put him in that category. And hopefully he'll be in that category when he returns. But those two are just phenomenal, phenomenal talents. Their teams reflect that and what they've done and how they've played. And so I give Durant a slight edge in part for having now been able to put up with Russell Westbrook, who had this famous, fabulous meltdown last week where he literally, I don't know if I've ever seen this. We had to leave the game to calm down because Thabo Sefolosha had gotten in his way when he was trying to drive to the basket and thwarted the play. Now, if you know what's going on, and we don't know, I mean, I know a lot of the things the Bulls run, for instance, but if you watch, all you got to do is watch the other players or the coach signaling to guys all game long, you're in the wrong spot. It goes on all the time. And so losing Harden, Westbrook not having as good a season as he's had before, obviously erratic, so I give the slight edge to Durant. But LeBron is fabulous. I mean, all the stuff and the criticism before, gone. You could see his mentality toward basketball changed in Game 6 against Boston last year. Clearly the best player on that team, clearly the guy who has to carry it. Dwayne Wade, while he's still a very good player, has shrunken back and accepted his role to his credit. So again, I give Durant a slight edge on that. Coach of the Year, to me, there's two guys stand out again, just like an MVP. It's Tom Thibodeau in the East and Mark Jackson in the West. Thibodeau has won this award before, but those are the two teams that are really, to me, have to be the national surprise teams. I thought the Bulls, you know, those of us here, I think, thought the Bulls would be better than the national media would credit him, because we know Thibodeau, because we know how he'd use a team, and we know that Ding, Noah, Boozer are better players than generally given credit for, though Ding did make the All-Star team last year. But Thibodeau's done a fabulous job. I had the Bulls, my pick preseason was 47 wins, and they're playing at above a 50-win pace, and which is terrific. And again, Golden State basically trading Ellis, who's one of their top players, averaging 20-plus points a game, for Bogut, designing a new offense around Bogut, and Bogut basically not showing up for the first half of the season, and Golden State playing well and being in the middle of the West the whole season. So I think you got to give a lot of credit to Mark Jackson. Their defensive mentality has changed to the point where they actually have one, which they hadn't for most of the last two decades. So those two guys, I would give Thibodeau the slight edge in my vote. Defensive Player of the Year, I actually go with Joakim Noah. I don't feel that's just because I watch the Bulls all the time, more so than anybody else. I mean, more so than any other teams. I do watch all the other teams. Noah, as we know, made the All-Star team. The Bulls are, and that is a factor in it. The Bulls are in the top three in defensive efficiency and all the top defensive stats, defensive field goal percentage, which is more a team thing than an individual thing. To me, other guys get named, Serge Ibaka, Tony Allen, Larry Sanders even, with the Bucks and the former talk show on HBO. Well, no, that's the other guy, I guess. But Tyson Chandler is the defending. Dwight Howard would have been the pick, I think, coming back, notion coming back with all the preseason buildup. But between the obvious, somewhat obvious impact that he did have the back surgery and is not back as the same player and has gotten injured again with his shoulder, he's pretty much eliminated. And I think a lot of the sentiment's gone to Tyson Chandler. I think then if you go to Tyson Chandler, you make the case right away that it's Joakim Noah. The Bulls are 3-0 this year against the Knicks. Noah, for the most part, has outplayed Chandler in those games, one of which Chandler got so frustrated along with several of his teammates, including Anthony, that they got ejected from the game. Two of the Bulls' wins over the Knicks were in New York. So I think if it's between Chandler and Noah, it has to be Noah, unless you're not paying attention, which is often happens among a lot of the media, I know at least. But I think Joakim is a legitimate choice. I think a lot of the media has noticed that, and I think if you were voting at this point, he would be the Defensive Player of the Year. Rookie of the Year, I had Anthony Davis, and I said there was nobody even close. Of course, that was the pick in the West with a lot of media saying that no one would be close to the Lakers. And Damian Lillard has just been fabulous, and it would be hard to imagine you would get through the rest of the season that anybody could get close to him. Davis has had a lot of ankle problems. He's been in and out of the lineup. I haven't even played, I don't think, enough games to qualify for the statistical minimums in the league. But Lillard's been terrific. Another one of this line of scoring point guards like Kyrie Irving and Drew Holiday, both have made the All-Star team, have come in that have really been special. It's like football in a lot of ways, where these rookie quarterbacks have come in. And it was unheard of for rookie quarterbacks to come in and even play. I mean, the greatest quarterbacks in history of the NFL, like Manning, as rookies, they played, but were awful. And usually, rookies in the NFL over the years, quarterbacks would wait two or three years to play and then have, you know, full great careers. Now they've come in, and much like the NBA, it was the same thing. Point guards, it was unheard of for a rookie point guard to come in and not only play, but to have success. John Stockton, some of us remember, he sat on the bench for the first 3 years. He couldn't beat out Ricky Green in Chicago, justifiably so. Ricky was a terrific point guard. But here you've got, you know, one of the greatest point guards in the history of the game, I don't think started until his third year. And that was not unusual. It wasn't questioned at the time in the NBA. So a guy like Lillard to come in, play as well as he got, the Portland on the edge of the playoffs in the West, has just been terrific. And so, you know, you can look at some other guys that have come on. I like Drummond in Detroit. I think he's going to really, really be good. I like the North Carolina kid with Golden State. I think he's really good, but Lillard is well above these guys. Yeah, looking at six man is, I sort of usually wait till the end. Six man and most improved are tough because there are so many candidates, and at least more with most improved, a lot of different definitions. Six man, I go with Jamal Crawford because I think Jamal is the definition of the six man. First of all, he's leading his team in scoring, which is generally unusual for a six man. Of course, Lou Williams did it last year with the Sixers. But it's somewhat lower in a non-offensive team. But the definition of that, of these guys have come in over the years, Ricky Pierce, Craig Hodges, who we had in Chicago back in the championship years, even back to Kevin McHale, who was a six-man early in his career, not the classic shooter, but a guy who's going to come off the bench and give you that scoring spark, even to some extent like we've seen here in Chicago over the years, Kyle Korver, Nate Robinson now doing a nice job. But Jamal's been really good. There's other guys, you know, Manu Ginobili's had a good season. Jason Terry, you know, been in this conversation, not so much. But I really like Jamal and really in the definition of a guy who's really going to score and give you that burst. Most improved to me has been one of those awards that needs a better definition. I know over the years some complain. They say, "Well, MVP. What is the MVP? It's not the best player, because if it was the best player, Jordan should have won every year. And so, how do you define the most valuable for each team? You know, any number of teams has the most valuable player. So it's sort of a combination. I've always felt of the best player in the league who happens to be having the best season that year. Like when Charles Barkley beat out Jordan in '93, Jordan wasn't having his best season, and Barkley had resuscitated the Suns. They end up in the finals with the Bulls. They won 62 games. And there is some element of not wanting to pick a guy who wins every year, but Karl Malone did again when in Utah, getting back to the finals in 97 and 98. James Harden is very improved, but he was going to be a great player. Everybody knew he was going to be a great player. He was the third pick in the draft, or fourth pick in the draft, whichever. So, I don't know how you could, I mean, I know how you can be improved from not getting an opportunity, but I look at that kind of award and say it should be a guy who we didn't think was going to be very good and has become, and to me, Omer Asik, more than anybody in the league. Now, we in Chicago thought he would be good and felt he would be good and felt he was playing well, but he wasn't playing a tremendous amount, certainly not his first year until Noah had some injuries, and then, you know, sort of filled in 14, 15 minutes off the bench. But you could see the defensive instincts, the rebounding ability. You just weren't going to be able to put up the numbers. But there was a lot of criticism of whether he can catch the ball, can score. And he's gone over in Houston, and you've got to say, he's become one of the top centers in the league. He's averaging a double-double. And this is a guy who was a second-round pick, barely mentioned, out of Turkey. Wasn't even playing, as I recall, with their national team. Wasn't starting. So, to me, Omer is, I know a lot of Chicagoans were all disappointed to see him go. It would be great to still have him. The NBA always tries to close the loopholes to make it so that the home team has the advantage with free agency. They missed that loophole, and the team that was trying to attract you had the advantage on free agency, which is why the Knicks lost Jeremy Lin to Houston,
And the Bulls lost Omer to Houston as well, because Houston had the ability to average out that salary. And with the financial ramifications and the game changing, neither the Knicks or Bulls did. And frankly, it made sense for them not to be able to do it, because it would hamstring them too much in the future with these players on their cap for $15 million. So as much as I like Omer, as much as all the mail I got over the years saying, trade Omer and keep Taj Gibson, trade Omer and get Courtney Lee, I always said if I had a choice, it would be Omer would be the one. But, you know, given the finances, much like Rudy Gay with the Grizzlies, understand not only that you have to do it, that you can. And the same thing with the Thunder. They're not as good as they are without Harden. But the NBA is changing, and players are going to start to realize that. Fans are going to have to realize that. You're not going to be able to have these three max-type salary players on your roster anymore. I think Miami's coming to that realization over the next couple of years as well. And so, you know, you just can't have every toy on Christmas. Well, I just came up with that, and it's not that original. But anyway, so that was a look at some of the things I talked about in my NBA column on Monday. As you know, I do fan questions and Ask Sam, which is very entertaining, at least to me. And I'll probably do some of these on the podcast up as well. So this is the first time, and as my friend, and it's a little name drop there, my friend Tony Kornheiser always says on his show, which is somewhat more popular than this one, next time I will do better. And as Thibodeau advises the players, we have a lot to learn. And so I do as well. So anyway, thanks for listening. And so far, I think that's in single digits, but I'm going to work on that too. Anyway, I will talk to you next week. Tune in here wherever exactly this is, Bulls.com and iTunes. And see you next week.